Welcome to the Bright Vibe Podcast. At Bright Vibe, we believe everyone deserves to be happy. But in today's world, everywhere you turn, there is division and negativity. At Bright Vibe, we have created a global movement to bring 8 million people together who are inspired to live bright, live bold, and share bright vibes. Alone, it can be hard to change, but together we can change the world. Welcome to the Bright Vibe Podcast. All right, Mindy Huebner, welcome to the Bright Vibe Podcast. Mindy is a mindset mastery coach. And the reason that we wanted you to come on the show was basically at, you know, when you've had a level of success, sometimes we talk about new projects or, you know, kind of earlier on in the leadership process, but when you've had a certain level of success, and I think the higher you go in success, it doesn't matter what you're being successful at, it's just more and more a mental game, right? There's, you know, and I've you know, read about and heard about like, high-performing athletes, the rise, I think it's what's called the rise of Superman or something, but, you know, and other books. But in essence, it becomes less and less about what you do and more about that mental game. It's between the two ears of the person doing it that truly those next levels, I would just say, of success. It doesn't matter if you're next level of success as a sole entrepreneur or next level of success as, you know, you're running a Fortune 10 or Fortune 100 company. It, especially in that level, it's completely mental, right? It's a completely mental game.
Who are you being?
Right.
It's what is your identity? Yeah. So much. Yes.
We talk about a lot about communication here on the show. And you really specialize in helping people kind of get in that space of like deprogramming, maybe bad programming, and reprogramming things to go to that next level, because you can't. You know, I did a whole year-long executive training program, and what they said in the very beginning and they echoed throughout that year was you can't get to where you want to go using the same tools that got you here, because those tools aren't going to get you to the next level of your game, whether that's, you know, business or even personal or family or whatever. Whatever got you here is only good to get you here. If you want to become something greater than that, you have to do something different.
Exactly. And what I love to say is we cannot out-hustle our limiting beliefs.
Yeah. Yes.
We try to.
And let's just start right there with what you just said. What's a limiting belief? What do you even mean by, because you and I have talked a little bit pre-show, so I have a pretty good understanding of limiting beliefs because I've explored them in myself, and hopefully I've released some, and I know I have released some, and I still, but there's always another level of limiting beliefs. So what do you mean by a limiting belief?
So there's two types of limiting beliefs, conscious and subconscious. Okay. Some limiting beliefs we don't even know we have. Mm-hmm. Other ones, we consciously know it. However, we're not necessarily looking at them as a limiting belief. So a limiting belief is any belief that limits you from taking that next step, believing that you can, doing that next thing, making that call, leaving that relationship, like any of those things, that is a limiting belief, a belief that limits you. Mm-hmm. They typically come about as a form of safety, right? Quote unquote, safety. Mm-hmm. This belief that I'm only good enough to make X dollars, right? Has protected me, protected again, until I realized I want to make some more money. What's going on? Like, why am I not moving up the C-suite? Why am I not growing and scaling my business? Mm-hmm. I've got these beliefs, and that's just one, like worth, being worthy of all the things that we want. That's just one party that goes on. Other ones are, well, the only way I can have a really successful podcast is if I copy so-and-so. Like, it has to look like that, instead of believing I can be inspired by that. And then I can make it feel really good to me and be authentic in it. So there's so many limiting beliefs that trip us up. Perfectionism, comparison, like those types of things.
And the conscious beliefs, I can probably almost goal set or coach or, you know, I can manage and maybe overcome conscious. It seems that the unconscious, that's driving me and I don't even know that it's driving me. I mean, the unconscious, and it typically seems like the unconscious are the ones that are a little bit nasty or sticky, or
It's just, how do you get rid of, how do you overcome something you don't even realize is there?
Exactly. So yes, and I'm going to say to you, yes, and yes, it would appear that the conscious ones are easier to overcome. However, not only are they conscious, but they are programmed into your subconscious and their habits. And so you go back into patterns where the limiting belief is leading you. The limiting belief is what is guiding that pattern again. So there is work to be done in the conscious ones first. And that the first level is awareness, being aware. And then the second level of that typically, okay, I'm now aware that I have this limiting belief. Where does it like to pop up on me? What am I doing? What activity am I taking place in? What circumstance am I putting myself in? So that you can really start to reverse engineer that very beginning, that first thought of, well, maybe this isn't going to be a good thing. Whatever that first thought is, to then stop the pattern right there. It takes practice to release the limiting beliefs. The second part of a conscious limiting belief is we have given meaning to something. So I can remember years and years ago, I said to my mindset coach, I was just starting to grow my email list. And she said, what are we talking about today? And I said, growing my email list is hard. She said, that's not a limiting belief. That's a fact. She said, now, so what you make that fact mean, that's where the limiting belief comes in. So because it's hard, does that mean I can't do it?
Right.
Does that mean, right? What does it mean? So we give meaning to something and then don't even go back and revisit it. And it is a program that runs. So for example, someone cuts you off in traffic. Pretty much all of us are like some form of jerk. Like, this is However, I like to think about that as, okay, does that meaning, is that empowering to me or is it even neutral? No, it's actually disempowering. Now I think the guy that cuts me off or the woman is a jerk, right? Although I've cut someone off and I'm not a jerk and you've cut someone off and you're not a jerk. So we give a split second meaning and then we never go back and visit it. Think about how many times we've done that in our lives with situations, with words, what words mean to us. All of that is piling up and limiting us until we have a moment of clarity or until you work with a coach who says, hey, Matt, this is what I'm hearing.
Right.
And then you go, oh, I never thought about it that way. So that's the conscious limiting beliefs and the meanings that we give that way. Unconscious, I had one many years ago, and that really got me on this road, this obsession with rewiring the brain. I did not realize that I had a limiting belief that rest was lazy. So I overworked all the time. I overachieved all the time. One, like that was my personality, so I thought, and it is, I'm very driven, that is. However, shaming myself or feeling guilty for wanting to take a break, like not being able to do that, caused exhaustion, caused burnout. So I was extremely successful, made lots of money, and it didn't feel good because I couldn't just lay on the couch and not feel bad about it. Now my journey has taken me to rest breeds productivity and creativity. And the more I rest, the better I am, right? The more I rest, the more money I make. The more I rest, the nicer human I am. The more, the more I rest, the less I actually have to work.
Right.
Because I am so much more productive in such a higher level of thinking. So that one was subconscious, unconscious. It was an unconscious one until I had my own epiphany. That can happen with us. Typically, it's someone else saying to us,
reflecting.
Have you ever noticed that, that you like that this is what you say or this is what you do? And then you go, no, I didn't notice that. Wow.
Totally, totally. And then how did you reprogram that? Because if it was subconscious, it's obviously, you know, not just.
Now I was aware.
Right. So awareness was the first step.
So I looked at the programming a little bit as well, right? How did that come in? Well, my dad was a workaholic. I married an overachiever who worked all the time too. All my life, I was shown, and remind me to come back to the way we filter though. All my life, I was shown that you, like, the more you work, the more you're worth.
Got
like,
it.
Like, earning your worth, right? Getting people to go, oh my gosh, right? Like, those types of things without knowing it. And then, so I looked at it, I'm like, I don't need to earn my worth. Like, this is also a limiting belief. So I just started untangling that. And it was a habit. It was a pattern. So when I would recognize the pattern, then I would say, okay, wait, this is just a habit. This is literally what I say to my client. I broke up with you. I say this to the habit. Like, you and me, we're over.
Right.
And I'm moving my attention. And I sometimes physically move my body in another direction, but I move my attention. So the beginning of that is knowing what I want to move my attention to. So if I know I'm looking to break a habit, a subconscious pattern, and I'm rewiring it, then I want to have a little arsenal of what I'm going to move my attention to.
Right. Exactly.
An anchor that reminds me of whatever it is that I am unwiring at the time, the opposite of that.
And so when you say anchoring, you're talking about a physical anchor, or are you talking about like a almost a mantra type anchor?
Either. Yep. They can both be, anchor could be an essential oil fragrance. It could be a song. It could be a piece of jewelry. It can be in NLP. We can set like actual anchors on your body to trigger states of being. It can be a mantra. It can be a vow to yourself, like any of those things. And and so having something to turn your attention to is essential in breaking the pattern, so that you can stop the momentum in that direction and move to another direction, and move your thoughts to another direction, move your physicality to another direction.
You know, and I'm a recovering overachiever myself. So I'm still, you know, it's like kind of like an alcoholic. You're always an alcoholic. You just, you've learned to, right? You've learned to balance life. So, but anyway, so I had to, so I reframed it with some help, with coaching. I reframed that, but I had to replace it because I couldn't just throw it away, because then it creates a vacuum and a void. And then who knows what goes in there next? It could be worse, right? And so for me, I turned it, and I wasn't even that at the time. I wouldn't say I was that spiritual or religious or anything like that, but I flipped it to, how do I see the God in this, right? So I just, slight modification, took out an O. Right. Or, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, then it shifted how I, and it took a while. To your point, it was practice, because even though I did some NLP type stuff and tried to, you know, deprogram it, and it's pretty deep. And so it would still pop up from time to time. And then sometimes I would just physically have to stop myself and say, okay, wait, that's the old program. What's the new program? How do I see the God in this? And then I would look around and go, oh, okay, well, you know, this and this and this, and this is, you know, this is how God planned the world, or this. And so when I said, how do I see the godness, you know, how do I see the goodness too, right? Those two things kind of coexisted. And so it just kind of helped me relax a little. Now that took a long time to deprogram, because it was at the base. But so, and I just really wanted to kind of give that as fodder for our conversation, but also a story so that people can relate and say, oh, because I didn't know it was there. And when I say I didn't know it was there, I was 32, 33. No, I was probably 35, 36. And I'd been living with this program and didn't know it was running until I started looking at everything in my life. And then I was like, that question applies to everything in my life.
First, our brain deletes, distorts, and generalizes based on what we believe, even if it's subconscious. So we have a RAS, we have a reticular activating system that works as a filter. The data that comes at us in any given day would make our heads explode if we had to filter
each
piece in. So instead, we have this filtering system that takes giant chunks of it and goes, delete, like, you don't even see this, right?
Right.
Distort, we're gonna uphold that belief that, you know, like, rest is lazy, that it's not good enough. This isn't good enough. We're gonna uphold that belief so you don't even have to think about it. And then we're gonna generalize over here. Like, so we take in like 5 to 7 actual bits of data a day. It is so crazy how our system filters. So it has to have a filtering system in it. Deleting, distorting, and generalizing. Once we bring something to the conscious, so the Bader-Meinhof theory, you go to get the new, I don't even know what generation Apple phone, right?
15, because like my wife got one. Okay. I got one for my wife. Okay. I know 15's out.
Right. You're not seeing it anywhere. You're not seeing the commercials, deleting, distorting, and generalizing, right? Mm-hmm. You're not seeing commercials. You're not seeing people have it. And all of a sudden, you're like, I think I like the new Apple. It's time, right? I'm going to upgrade. Yeah, yeah. You get the phone everywhere you look. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got it. It's every ad on Instagram. It's every ad. This is the Bader-Meinhof theory. We don't see it until we bring it into our conscious. Mm-hmm. And so it was there. People were having it.
Right.
Right. We didn't see it until we brought it to the conscious. So it's the same. It's like that with a limiting belief as well.
Mm-hmm.
Once we bring it forward, oh, well, now you saw it everywhere.
Right.
You saw how it was affecting you everywhere. And so you had so many opportunities then to go, oh, old programming, shifting. And you talked about putting a new programming in, which is very similar to I move my attention to.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Same thing.
Attention to this new thing.
Right.
And when we were talking about meaning, the meaning that we give something. So when you were using the is this good enough in business, I call this checking the data. So there are seven essential keys to creating the success that we want. And the first three, know what you want, take action, check the data. Mm-hmm. So know what you want. Believe it or not, that's more difficult for people than, right? Like,
Totally.
What we don't want. We know how we don't want people. So let's flip that over so we can get crystal clear. Know what you want, take action. And when I say action, aligned action. Not spaghetti at the wall, not like take the action, the needle mover action. Also, like that's not as easy as it sounds, but we take practice in it. The third key is checking the data. Here's what we do as human. We make the data our identity and we make the data mean. So this business idea, right? Isn't working. It's failing. I'm a failure.
Oh, right. Yep.
This is the next thing that we do is we over-identify with the data instead of saying to ourselves, this is data. These are metrics to give me a direction. That's it.
Right. Like,
so the data says, this is working.
Yep.
Bravo. I'm going to keep doing it. The data says, this isn't working. Okay. Time to reassess the action that I'm taking. The data says this part's working and this part's not. Okay, great. I get to tweak. It's just data. And we get so caught up in giving the data meaning about our worth, our value, our identity. And that is huge.
I really think I've got that couch behind me. I could probably move this monitor right over to the couch because you're pretty much describing the last 4 years of my life, right?
All of us, whether we're on a health journey and the data is the scale.
Right.
So identity, I started running at 39 and quickly took on the identity of a runner. And that meant a lot to me. To identify with other runners, with just racing and doing things. And I was never, please don't hear me say I was ever kind of any Olympic athlete or anything like that. But to me, like the levels that I would achieve for me, I had goals and trained and
times
all kinds
we're looking,
of things. And really, like, I'm a runner. Like, it was a thing, right? It was an identity. And then I got hurt. And I couldn't run. And I had a moment longer than of, well, who am I? I'm not a runner. Who am I? This is the... If your identity now boxes you in, if your identity is no longer expansive, it's essential to take a look at it. It's essential to go, okay, wait a minute. What am I making this mean? I was making it mean so much about me that I was a runner. So I had the opportunity to say, and I do the work, right? Like I have access to these tools and do the work. And then I said to myself, okay, just because I'm not a runner in this moment, like hopefully I'll heal, right? And if I don't, what is it about identifying as a runner
mm-hmm.
that I like so much.
Right.
Expand this. And when I went deeper on it, I identify as a woman who mm-hmm. really loves to move her body to mm-hmm. feel good.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I got from running, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got to move my body. I got to feel good. I got to work hard because I am.
Yeah. You like to work hard. Yeah.
Driven.
Yep.
And I got the reward from it. I got to rest. I mm-hmm. got to fuel for races. There were all mm-hmm. these things that got to happen in that happened in it. And so when I figured out that truly the identity was a woman who moves her body to feel good,
mm-hmm.
well, now that
yeah.
blew wide open.
Right.
One of the ways I can do that is to run. Mm-hmm. And I love to run.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally healed and was right. able to start running again. And I've continued to get older mm-hmm. and it's running is harder on my knees and harder mm-hmm. on those things, right? Still love it. Like, we'll run for fun. This is how mm-hmm. much I like it. And now I also strength train, lift heavy weights, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I will walk on the treadmill. I'll go for walks. I live in a town that has a huge lake. I'll go mm-hmm. walk around the lake. I will move my body in a whole bunch of ways to feel good.
Right.
And that is the identity. And it's super expansive mm-hmm. as opposed to just a runner, right?
Yes. And you're bringing up a point that I've heard made by several different thought leaders, teachers, coaches, that it's, a lot of times we ourselves hold this super high standard for ourselves that we are only going to be happy, or I'm only going to feel successful, or I'm only going to feel loved if this happens and that happens and this happens, right? And we make it so conditional that it never actually happens. Or even if we get the thing, there's not happiness in it because it's so conditional, versus the reverse engineering, which would seem counterintuitive, which is kind of, I would say, in a way, lowering the standard, but not in a bad way, to where we start to feel success. And I'm here to tell you, if you're a driven person, you're always going to be a driven person.
Exactly.
To your point, you're driven to rest now, but it's probably a thing where you've got boxes around rest, right? I am in a new phase of my life where I'm like, self-care is a big thing, but it's 40 straight days of self-care, right? It's not just, I have boxes I'm checking on an app, right? That I'm like, so I'm like, no, I'm cold plunging and I'm doing the sauna and I'm, doing a quiet time and I'm doing some, meditation or, breathing exercise. So my self-care is very regimented, but it's working. Right?
There you go.
Because I made a game out of
you,
it. Yeah, that's how I, yeah.
You
yes.
operate. This right. makes you feel good in the way yes. that you're showing up. So right. there's no like that I always say to my clients, like, you can't get it wrong. You can get it more right.
Yeah.
We can keep practicing, right? But you
right.
can't get it wrong. If you're taking care of yourself, mm-hmm. like, then you can't get it wrong. Like, you're taking care of yourself. You're right. You're consciously casting the votes
yep.
towards doing those things. And
right.
and so I agree 100%. Like, it doesn't, we do, and overachievers, high achievers, we set the bar. Here's the thing about me. I will never hold a standard for someone else that I don't have doubled for myself.
Right, of course.
And that is a practice that I unlearn
uh-huh.
every
yep.
day to
yep.
let myself off the hook
mm-hmm.
of standards that are unachievable.
Right.
On a consistent basis.
Right.
Right. On a consistent
yep.
basis.
Right.
No one's perfect. If we're, I say, if we're casting votes 80% of the time, if we're showing up 80% of the time
mm-hmm.
in a way that we want to, like moving us towards the life we want, the experience that we want, whatever that is, we are freaking killing it. We are gold medaling in it. If
mm-hmm.
we're able to do that 80% of the time, like that is 100% of the time. Seriously,
right.
like
yeah, yeah.
being able to,
right.
to be in there 80% of the time. The really interesting thing about identities is that we need lots of them because
mm-hmm.
we cycle through them all day long.
Right.
And every identity is a role with a goal.
Right.
Think about that. So every identity is a role with a goal.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly right now, you're going to stay in the identity of podcast host.
Yes.
You're going to tap into self-improvement. junkie, you're going to tap into like whatever those identities are. Here's where we also get really tripped up with ourselves. When we are identifying or over-identifying, I'm mad. Notice what the words we say after I am are some of the most powerful in the universe. So when we over-identify or when we just identify with I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm lonely, right? When we're there, that's it. It's not a bad thing. What we get to ask ourselves is, okay, every identity is a role with a goal. If I'm angry right now, I'm angry, Mindy. What's my goal? What's my intention? What's my need? I'm angry because I want to be angry. I want to say mean things. I want to like stomp my foot. Okay, great. There's no shame in that. Mm-hmm. The problem comes in when we stay stuck in the identity. So if you were stuck in the identity of son with your wife and with your guests, that is not going to cut it. It's going to be weird.
Right?
It's like it's not going to serve you. It's not going to serve you. So learning how to integrate our identities, they're all on a spectrum. So if we're talking about just you personally, like if we said angry to happy, let's just say that. And for those of you not watching, I'm doing like angry on one side, happy on the other side. And it's a spectrum that we're going on. So angry Matt and happy Matt, they're the same Matt. They're on a spectrum. So we're moving on the spectrum. We have a preference over who we want to show up as. I'm going to say probably more often than not, you want to be more on the happier side, the content side than the angry side. However, angry Matt needs to pop out sometimes. Like he serves a purpose. So we're not shaming either one of those identities. What we want to like grow into is saying, oh, I need both to operate as a fully functional human. I'm going to integrate them in so that I have a choice over who shows up, not the identity choosing me, not the identity like not being able to control angry Matt or not being able to control spiritually bypassing happy head in the clouds, right? Like that.
This is
some deep work. And this being able to tap into our identity that way, consciously, so that subconsciously, then we program ourselves to know that it's safe to rock into any identity and tap into what's the goal here? To roll with the goal. What do I need? Do I need to stomp and yell and go outside and whatever, like yell into a pillow to move, to shift this emotion? Okay, great. Then I deserve. Right. It's knowing that you have a conscious choice over who you're being is like game changer. I read recently that game changer is a word that we should cancel, but I really like it. It's game changer when we do it. It really is.
I didn't hear that, so I won't cancel it.
Okay, good.
We won't bleep it out on the show. So I have been exposed and to stuff that's called parts work, and that sounds like kind of what you're describing, but in parts work, you know, a lot of times I have, and I've even coached others to actually give it a different name than Matt, so that it becomes so like when you were talking about the angry, well, that in my world, kind of the bad man, right? And the bad man is a certain part of my personality. And even though I'm calling him the bad man, I'm not disowning him. I'm just allowing him to have, if I'm really thoughtful, I allow him to have his time and space to basically. I used to envision it like I'd wake up in the morning and a way to kind of manage, I guess, that part of my personality would be like he would phone in from prison and he would tell me, no, this was literal. This isn't a made up thing. Like literally he would phone me from prison when I was in the shower first thing in the morning. And he would basically run through all the things that he would like to do in the world that day. And they were all terribly criminal, right? And then I would just be like, is there more? Is there more? And then he would run out of steam and energy. And then I'd say, okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow morning. And that would allow me at least to, in a way, disidentify like that's me, but still owning that it's me and giving me some time to shift. And if I didn't give him time, I did notice this. If I didn't give him airtime, then he would just pop in on the most inconvenient moments. Like he wouldn't just call in the shower in the morning. He would wait until I'm with another human being. And then he would show up and say bad things, right? Or do stupid stuff, right? And then that was not so fun for me or for the other person, right? Yes. That's where regret comes in.
So I'm super familiar with parts work. Where I received my NLP training, a whole is better than parts. And so they really were taught us to integrate, right?
Yes, totally.
And, and so here's the other thing about identity. I'm so glad that you brought that up. When we de-identify with the emotion, angry, bad, jailed Matt, right? When we de-identify with the emotion, the like the ultimate consciousness is just me. I'm just me. I'm just Mindy. And now I can have this emotion or this emotion, but I'm just, you're just Matt, right? And that is the ultimate, like, if we're going to get super high, like that is the ultimate higher consciousness.
Right.
One being with the divine is I'm just me. I have no goal except to be and exist. And that, like, wow, we just went way up here, right?
We could go farther, Mindy. In another hour, we could go so much farther.
We could. The work is in de-identifying, saying, this is not me. This is an emotion I'm experiencing, right? We're getting rid of the I am. And we're saying, like, I can experience this without taking it on.
Right. Without being the only thing in my
that I am. Exactly. Because we can't filter. It's very difficult. One of my mentors in learning a process called Rapid Rewire that I recently, last year, I was certified in, would talk about his dad constantly identifying as a Marine, like never letting down the Marine, which is extremely problematic when you're, you know, talking to a four-year-old, right?
Right.
Like a four-year-old doesn't need a Marine. A four-year-old needs a daddy.
Right.
Right. Or whatever. And a wife needs a husband. She doesn't
need a Marine.
Funny enough, I am married to a Marine. He's retired, but however, so I totally get the analogy of when you are only seeing yourself through one lens, one identity, how that can really just muck up the works.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. Totally. So, Mindy, this is your podcast. How would you like to put a bow on this?
Well, what I would really love to tie this up with is you really get to ask yourself two questions all the time. And you were talking about the quote, where's the good in this? Where's the God in this, right? The two questions are, who am I being? And who do I want to be? Right? Like, who am I being and who do I want to be? And better than who do I want to be? You know what? Scratch that. Who am I being? Who do I get to be? Who do I get to be? Because I get to be anything I want. So if I'm being someone who's not giving someone else grace, not giving myself grace, not taking care of myself, not thinking before I speak, not whatever, there's no shame. We're not shaming that. We're not shooting that. We're just taking a beat and saying to ourselves, who am I being? Who do I get to be? I get to be this person. And maybe right now I'm not moving in that direction. However, I'm becoming more and more aware. Recognizing who we're being is the very beginning of the magic, right? Is that moment of like, oh, is that interesting?
Right.
Like, what is up with me right now? When we start to recognize those things. So really elevating your awareness. Who am I being? Who do I get to be? Those two questions right there will really allow you to start journaling, allow you to start going deeper. Because who do I get to be is really like, what does that human look like? What do they sound like? What kind of people do they have in their lives? What podcasts do they listen to? Right. Like what, how much sleep do they get? It's asking all those questions, fun questions to really dream and cast a vision. In order to get where you want to go, you get to be real clear on where you're at.
Totally. Totally. Okay. Well, I'll let that be the wrap to this. So for people who do want more, you have a website. So you're easy to find. It's Mindy Huebner. And so it's MindyHuebner, because her husband's family's from Germany and they didn't know English. And so they pronounce it Huebner, right? Huebner.com. So it's Mindy with an I, two I's, Huebner.com. And then you have all your stuff on there.
You can find me anywhere on the social as Mindy.
Got it.
Like, you just, even if you spell it wrong, I'm going to come up. Like,
okay. You've done a great job.
There's not another one of me.
Perfect. Perfect. You be the best you can be. Right. There is no more one more you than you. Perfect.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mindy. Thank you so much. And I wish you the best.
Thank you for being a part of the Bright Vibe podcast. For more information, go to brightvibe.com. That's BRITE vibe, VIBE.com. Thank you for listening.